We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So, change, how it happens and how it doesn't happen. Last week, we tend to way underestimate the power of positive emotion to drive deep change, and we tend to way overestimate the power of negative emotion. That's just how our brains are wired. But drawing from both our ancient texts, we do have a rich heritage that advocates for joy, and drawing from current research about how habits get imprinted into our brains, so it turns out if we want to build a behavior into habit, a dose of joy, a dose of happiness, a dose of laughter, a smile, goes a lot further than the more commonly deployed negative emotions. We underestimate the power of positive emotion. We overestimate the power of negative emotion. Well, this week, it's somewhat related in principle. We tend to underestimate the power of gentleness to drive deep interior change, to drive deep social change, and we tend to overestimate the power of harshness. The wisdom literature in our tradition tells us again and again, gentleness. And as we say, wisdom is wisdom because it works. A gentle word, our texts say, will turn away anger, but a harsh word will stir up anger. And angry people tend to be a lot less reasonable, tend to be a lot less amenable to change. Another text says, clothe yourself in compassion. That's what Paul says to the spiritual community at Colossae. And clothe yourself in kindness and clothe yourself in gentleness because, again, gentleness works better than harshness. Shakespeare said it in As You Like It. Gentleness shall force more than force shall move us to gentleness. In Jane Eyre, oh, that gentleness, so much more potent than force. Well, gentleness is woven into our wisdom literature because, again, gentleness works. Well, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's wisdom. It doesn't matter that it works because we tend to way underestimate the power of gentleness and we tend to way overestimate the power of harshness. So, Doug, you're going to talk about gentleness today. Well, that's sweet. It's kind of lovely, actually. So, good point, Doug. You're a preacher, man. You should probably keep talking about that. But come on, the rest of us who have to live out here in the real world and have to make it out here, it's not super relevant, thank you. It's cutthroat out here. Have you seen those yahoos in Congress? Did you see the Confederate flag there in the Capitol building? How about the Nazi flag on that tree out in Wake Forest? Gentleness, really? That's what you got? So, once more into the breach, stripping away the baggage around our ancient wisdom, drilling down to the core, finding that kernel of wisdom there at the core, and then unearthing it, rebuilding it for the world that we live in now. We do that all the time. Let's do it with gentleness. Now, we'll see some research in a moment, but first, let's go back to the introduction to the guided meditation this morning. When we were bringing to mind our own experience of having been called out or having been called in, which one of those has greater power to affect change inside of you? When you have failed, when you've made some egregious mistake, when you are blushing with shame or scolding yourself for having been so stupid or so selfish, what better evokes long-term, now that's a key word, what better evokes long-term change in your life, being called out or being called in? Now here's the thing about harshness. It's just inside of us, it is. But consider this, even though it's inside of us, even though it's habit, it tends to isolate, doesn't it? What harshness does is it positions us outside the state of belonging. And that is a threat. And when our brains sense that threat, it tends to bring up all kinds of interior mechanisms, all designed to defend or to protect or to prop up our often fragile sense of self. Harshness, whether it comes from our own inner critic or whether it comes from somebody else, even though it's not true, it often makes us feel like we are the only person to have ever erred. It makes us feel like we're the only person to have ever been this stupid as we were. And so when we feel outgrouped by harshness, we tend to defend, we tend to fight, we tend to get responsive. One of the ways that we defend ourselves, I did not really do the dumb thing, was denial. Or that thing, it wasn't dumb at all, is actually a smart thing. Or, wait, what about you? You did the dumb thing too, see? And none of those are particularly helpful when it comes to producing deep change. So we can look at the ancient texts, and we will look at brain research. But really, we don't have to look much further than our own interior human responses to see this principle. We underestimate the power of gentleness, and we overestimate the power of harshness. So, as we did last week with joy, as we did last week with positive emotion, we'll start close to home. I'll define an important principle, how change happens in our own lives, but as we are exploring this principle, I want you to keep in mind, just as we did last week, I think it'll be easy to do, keep in mind that this is a principle that scales up. It's bigger than your life and my life. We are talking about how change happens in your life, how change happens in my life, but also we're talking about how change happens in our homes and in our families and in our companies and in our classrooms and in our neighborhoods and in our broken and hurting nation. So again, harsh is instinct. Judgmental comes naturally because harsh and judgmental, they feel powerful. We feel that if we are harsh toward ourselves, we're going to make a difference. If we are harsh toward ourselves when we fail, then we are applying strong medicine to what ails us. So surely, harsh is going to fix the problem. And surely, this will assure that we don't ever do that stupid thing or behave that badly next time. Surely, this will fix the problem. It feels so strong. Sometimes we even take pride when we are particularly hard on ourselves because it tells us that we're serious about growth. We are fierce in our ambition to succeed. We are really committed to becoming a better person. Just look at how resolved I am by looking at how harsh I am on myself. Look at that commitment. Boy, I'm going to do better. But again, ancient wisdom and research tell us harsh, it is not the powerful tool of change that we think it is. It's just not. It turns out people with strong, harsh on themselves thought habits tend to carry greater levels of interior stress. Consequently, carry higher rates of procrastination. It actually turns out that there is an inverse relationship between our inner harshness and actually achieving the goals that we set before ourselves. Now, again, keep in mind, this is a personal principle, but it's a principle that scales up. Here's what harshness does. It puts friction into the system. We respond harshly to some failure, to some shortcoming. We do that once. Maybe it even works that time. Maybe it helps us do better. But now, we're more likely to respond harshly the next time. And the next time, and the next one after that, until harsh is just how we respond whenever we fail, whenever we come up short. So now we've got a new dynamic in the system. We've got a harshness dynamic in the system, which adds more friction to the system, because now we have to deal with the problem that needed fixing in the first place, but we also have to deal with our own internal responses to our own interior harshness habits. And think about what you do when you're around a harsh teacher, for example, or a harsh boss, some harsh authority figure, or a harsh coworker. What do? Well, probably you do some combination of avoiding, giving them a wide berth, or some combination of fighting back, neither of which creates the best environment for solving whatever problem needs solving. Again, underestimate, overestimate. Now, friction in the system is a big deal Because as we've been seeing in this lesson, big changes, the kind of big changes we need in our lives and in our world, big changes actualized as a series of tiny changes. One tiny change lays the foundation for another tiny change, which lays the foundation for another and another and another. And if there's friction in the system, then there is fatigue in the system. If there is friction in the system, then there is avoidance in the system. Harshness sets us up to have to face obstacles to the very process by which deep change happens. Underestimate, overestimate. Imagine you have a friend, and when you screw up your worst, this friend knows you well enough to not define you by your screw up. And if you're lucky, or actually if you've been building your network of spiritual friendships, if you're lucky, you have a friend like that. Maybe you have more than one. And if you do, this friend can even be shocked by the enormity of your failure. Whoa, that is a big screw up. But this friend knows you, and this friend knows that you are more than that screw up. This friend, upon realizing the screw up has happened, takes a breath, hitches up her sleeves, and gets in there with you and says, okay, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to fix this? How are we going to make this right? Because this friend is demonstrating gentleness. In gentleness, forgiveness is just assumed. In gentleness, doing better going forward, that's just assumed. In gentleness, support isn't determined by what you did or didn't do. No, support is determined by the friendship, not the failure. Support is tied to the relationship. Well, here's what ancient wisdom tells us, and here's what brain research also tells us. Learn to be that friend. Learn to be that friend to one another, and learn to be that friend to yourself. Because that kind of gentle increases our emotional resilience. It improves our internal well-being. It even improves our physical health. That kind of gentle, it turns out, it improves our productivity. It frees up the bandwidth that we need to work on whatever failure or weakness caused the problem in the first place. So again, I pray God you have that kind of friend. But even if you don't, no matter, you can start now being that kind of friend. My mother told me when I was young, if you want a friend, be a friend. Turns out, if you will be that friend for others, you will find that what you put out there comes back. But here's the thing. That kind of gentleness, it feels very foreign to us. It's just not what is done. It is not what we do. Gentle with ourselves, sure, it may be more effective. It may do a better job precipitating change, but it doesn't come naturally. So this is Kristen Neff. She is a psych professor at the University of Texas, and she wrote that book, Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. Now in the book, she highlights research into how, when it comes to deep change, we tend to overestimate harshness and underestimate gentleness. Self-compassion is what she calls it. So researching hundreds of undergraduates and then expanding the research to include younger people and then veterans, it turns out that the friction caused by harshness is very, very costly. When we have a high level of harshness thought habits, it correlates with higher rates of depression, higher rates of anxiety, even higher rates of suicide. When we have a high degree of harshness thought habit, it correlates with higher degrees of procrastination and lower rates of productivity. There are fewer opportunities taken and more opportunities missed. Think about that. What we miss in our lives because we did not take opportunities, because we were using that bandwidth to deal with the effects of our own interior harshness. Now, gentleness, on the other hand, correlates with a greater sense of satisfaction as well as physical health in our lives. Turns out you get less back pain, you have fewer headaches, fewer respiratory problems. Inner gentleness tends to mute our body's stress response and reduces the inflammation that gets associated with mental stress. And so people who develop gentleness thought habits tend to take better care of their bodies. They do better at healthy diet and exercise. They're generally more proactive in their worlds. And that makes sense. Because if we develop our own interior gentleness, it's like we're acting as our own supportive friend, our own unconditionally accepting friend. Or imagine it this way, that we are acting as our own unconditionally supportive grandparent. We can become that for ourselves, saying to ourselves, oh, sweetie, you know, but this would be good for you. Why don't you go to bed on time? If you get enough rest, you know, tomorrow's going to go better. Or, you know, honey, if you apologize, I think you can make this thing right. We can do that for ourselves when we develop interior thought habits, and support makes us better able to succeed in making what is wrong right. But that's just not the way we think, is it? We think that if we are too gentle on ourselves, then we are going to let ourselves get away with murder. If there's no stick with which we can beat ourselves, then we know what's going to happen. We're just going to get lazy. We're going to weaken our own willpower. But it turns out just the opposite of that is true. Once we develop the habit and the rhythm and the inner capacity to be gentle with ourselves, once we know that we are going to treat ourselves kindly, Neff's research shows that we become more likely to tackle the troubles that we need to tackle in our lives. When our thought habits become gentle toward ourselves, we develop a greater motivation to correct our own errors. We work harder after we fail some important test. We become more determined to make right whatever moral failure we've committed. Gentleness creates the interior sense of stability and bedrock security that allows us then to confront our own weaknesses without feeling threatened. We can move in and make positive changes because we don't have as fragile a sense of self as we do when we regularly practice harshness. Interior gentleness reduces our ego protective habits, our ego defensiveness. It makes it more possible for us to dig into and to expose and to look at and to work on our shadow sides. Now, that's really important. That's important because you've got a life and I've got a life and we need this principle at work in our lives. But I want you to remember as we're going through this very important principle that it scales up. Gentleness works for you, for me, but it also works through you and through me for others as well. Now, later in this lesson, I will talk about scaling these principles up. But you're smart. You can see how joy, that's what we talked about last week, and how gentleness, what we've just talked about this week, how these can do a better job precipitating the kind of change, not just in your life and mind, but the kind of change that we want in the world around us. You can see how these principles scale up. We begin at the beginning. Yes, we do. We begin with ourselves. If you want to change the world, start with yourself, Gandhi said. But as we begin to integrate these principles into thought habits, as gentleness becomes part of our behavior thinking habits, we just do become agents of change in our own lives and in the world around us. So, the practical part of the lesson, what are we going to do? And you are not going to be surprised, this is not new material. But what I hope is different in this historical moment is the imperative of the moment. The imperative of the moment that we live in. We are, you and me, in this moment, Things are in need of deep change all around us. So practices that we talk about all the time, we must not let them fall into the bucket of familiarity and contempt. We cannot take them for granted. I hope the take home from this lesson is we have to move these practices from optional to essential. We do the loving kindness meditation because gentleness doesn't just happen. Gentleness toward ourselves does not just happen. Gentleness toward our neutral person does not just happen. And surely not gentleness toward our difficult person, it does not just happen. So we do the practice so that gentleness develops and becomes a new set of interior habits from which we can draw. The spiritual practices, they rewire our head habits. Also, we do a self-awareness practice group today at 3:30 so that we normalize our understanding that everybody falls short. Everybody deals with their shadow side. We did not have the option to not have a shadow side. And everybody does a better job together learning the tools that help us unravel our false selves. And once we allow that true self to emerge, we do become gentle toward others and toward ourselves. And every week when I talk about together and I ask you to make a call or send a text, the power of spiritual friendship is because we rewire harsh and we develop gentle, as we do with all the spiritual principles, better together in authentic spiritual relationships one with another. So here's today's bottom line, a triple bottom line. First, we tend to way, way underestimate the power of gentleness, and we tend to way, way overestimate the power of harshness. Second, gentleness toward ourselves and toward others. It is not weakness, as we often think it is. The ancient wisdom and research are pretty overwhelming at this point. When the going gets tough, the tough become gentle. And third, history is demanding of us. We shift these key spiritual practices from optional to essential. Loving kindness meditation, self-awareness practice, mindfulness meditation. We've got tools, people. We've got the tools that we need to be the people we need to be to rise to this moment in history. Gentleness. Just occurred to me, I wonder if I could do a lesson on gentleness and not be gentle while I was doing it. So indwelling divine, the inner light, the inner voice, may we become unconditional advocates for ourselves so we can access the interior light, so we can access the interior light for ourselves and for one another. And may we wisely discern together how these principles, they scale up so we not only can change our lives, but we also change our worlds. May that be so. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, and we all donate online now. If you go to our website, at the top there's the donate button, and please remember, as I say each week, that spiritual community is worth investing in. Every unit of love, and every unit of time, and every unit of energy that you give to spiritual community returns an investment that is priceless. And the same thing with the dollars that it takes to be a healthy financial community. So please, if you get to keep your job, please donate online. And that being said, Gene, what are folks thinking about? What is stirring up in their hearts?
So lots of comments. Ann Scioli started out, said this commitment to the bigger picture and long game, steady as she goes and with gentleness approach, is having a palpable effect on my spirit. It's alienating my firebrand and outraged friends. My family, however, likes the new me a lot better.
Because here's how I could hear that. My family likes that better because it lets them just keep doing all the crazy ugliness that they keep doing. And I don't think that's probably what you were saying, Angie, but I know that's what a lot of people hear. And to be honest, sometimes that can be heard. So, you know, I didn't write it into the lesson, but it is a thing that okay, Here's what's coming later in the lesson. I don't know if you can even get this movie anymore. Back in the 80s, a movie came out. It was probably wasn't a biography of Gandhi, but it was the story of Gandhi. And there's this one particular scene in which he is demonstrating and talking about the third way. If you can't see the movie, you can definitely read about that. The first way is in-your-face confrontation. The second way is just lie down and take it. Don't challenge wrong when it's perpetrated. But the third way is neither of those. The third way is we learn creative ways to precipitate mind change. And you can't even get to the third way without passing through the door of gentleness. You can't get to the third way unless you've already begun to work the environment in which people's minds actually do change. So we are not arguing for doing nothing and letting our families just keep being batshit crazy. We're not arguing for that. But what we are saying is what we've been doing, if it was going to work, it would have worked. So now here's the wisdom of our tradition that comes along and says, here is a way that you can actually make change. And so for your friends who want you to be more outraged, the question is, how well has that outrage been working? How well is it going? Is it actually precipitating change? So if you want to change your family, we start with changing ourselves. If we want to change ourselves, we start with changing our minds. There's a whole bunch of wisdom behind that. All right. What are folks thinking?
So there's a whole bunch of comments that basically speak to the idea of, you know, it's much harder to forgive ourselves and be kind to ourselves than, you know, it is to be that way with others. And how could you possibly, you know, how could any external judgment be worse than what my internal ones are? So there's that. So, you know, and the next part of that was, wow, yeah, I could have had a VA to wish I learned that much earlier. The other one that kind of goes with that is Bob Love says, please contrast being gentle on ourselves with lack of discipline. So, you know, there's a lot of that.
What was the first one?
Just that it's much harder to forgive ourselves and be kind to ourselves than it is to others. And we wish we had learned that or had somebody press that in on us much earlier in our development. Yeah.
So let's talk about maybe not what you said, but what I heard. It is not an uncommon experience to find it easier to be gentle toward others than it is to be gentle toward ourselves. But I'm going to suggest maybe that's a story that we're telling ourselves. We're telling ourselves a story of, look how gentle I am toward other people, but look how gentle I am not to myself. And that might be something that we believe, but it might not be true. And here's why. Because when we are being gentle toward others, often what we're doing is we are servicing a false self strategy to make our worlds work for us. And it would be something like this. If I'm really nice to people, people will be nice to me. If I'm really nice to people, if I'm really gracious and understanding toward people, I can tell myself a story about how good I am, about how wonderful I am, which is really just a nicer version of the false self. It is it's not a true enough truth to contain our humanity. So if you find yourself finding it easier to be gentle toward others than it is being gentle toward yourself, I may suggest you're maybe not either. Maybe you're not gentle toward others, and maybe you're not gentle toward yourself. And that the way forward is to begin, if we want to change the world, we start with ourselves, is to begin being gentle with ourselves. Because then what we do if we are gentle toward other people will be less about what we get out of that interaction, what we get out of that quid pro quo. I'll be nice to you, you treat me better in the world. I'll be nice to you, I can tell myself good stories about myself. It will be less that, and it will be more authentic. Just we have become the divine light for the world around us. So it starts with this laborious work of going through how we start with gentleness toward ourselves. So, Those are some happy thoughts that occurred to me while you were talking. And let's talk about Bob's thing about contrast being gentle with ourselves and not being disciplined. Again, it goes to our deeper desires. That's why I started that. You know, I had a couple people tell me after we did that lesson on deeper desires, and, you know, Doug, we've heard that before. And I want to say, yeah, we've heard that before, but how well are we doing it? How are we implementing it? How are we digging deeply? Because if we dig into our deeper divine-centered selves, we do want the fruit of the Spirit. And one of the aspects of the fruit of the indwelling divine is self-discipline. We want to do the things that need to be done when they need to be done, and we want to not take on more than is ours to take on. We want that because that is wisdom, and that works, and that is life, and that is health. We want self-discipline. But one of the ways that we get to self-discipline is with the rod of discipline. That's what, or the stick for beating that I referenced from Paul earlier. And here's the thing, I've got a dear friend who works on discipline projects on a regular basis, and she is really good at making sure she does the thing. But as her false self is kind of unraveling, and as her authentic self is emerging, there's a little bit less discipline than there used to be. Because what was called self-discipline was actually a false self, fear-driven. If I don't stick to the plan, something bad's going to happen. And as that fear base is eroding out, and as the authentic self is rising, it doesn't really look super disciplined right now. In this transitional moment, it actually looks less disciplined than it did when the false self was running. So, but where we will end up, this is just a snapshot of today. Where the video takes us is to the place where we become self-disciplined because it is who we have become. We have become the fruit of the indwelling divine manifest in our very lives. Love and joy and peace and kindness and goodness and self-discipline is part of that process. So virtue is often propped up by a vice. I am too proud to be seen as mean-spirited. So I don't act in a mean-spirited way. But I haven't yet emerged into the authentic expression of love simply because I have become that. That's where this journey takes us. Now, don't be discouraged. It's a long time to get there. And a lot of good stuff happens between now and when we get there. But that's kind of where we go on this process. All right. It's time, right? All right. I miss you people. I do. If you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we carry the indwelling divine in us. We do. We've got everything inside of us we need. We've got all the virtue we need. We've got all the compassion and care and love we need. We've also got this tremendous set of obstacles, this false self in there that gets in the way of it. But when we access that, it is there. And so one of the ways we find it is by, if you would extend your other hand to our city, reaching in to find it so that we can share it with the people that we live and work and go to school with. It's one of the ways that we develop our greater accessing is serving others. So let's look for opportunities to repair and to heal our worlds as we go. God bless you. We're dismissed and see y'all next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.